You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Nico Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And let's get biblical! But before we do that, it's very important that we cover a couple ground rules. These are the rules that cannot hit the ground, or else we will all be eternally
damned?
Dishonored.
Oh, yes. Dishonored? Okay. First of all, I'm Lauren. I was raised Christian, Presbyterian to be specific, and I'm now an atheist.
And I'm Nico. I'm the non-believing sort of Jew. Also, this is not a Christian Bible.
Also, it's not for kids.
I didn't even finish my sentence.
Well, whatever. I don't care.
Okay. And there, I just want to introduce the panel tonight. First of all, we have a writer who's been featured on The Toast, Slate, LA Review of Books, and many other places. Lauren O'Neill.
Yay! Yay for me! on the other side of the room, we have someone who doesn't write, but he plays a lot of music, and he's real cool and good and cute. That's Nico Bakulich!
Hello! I don't have any notable credits. Speaking of lacking notable credits...
Today we're reading a different sort of book.
That's right.
That's not true. It's not that different. But it is apocryphal in the Protestant Bible.
Mm-hmm. So this week we're going back to the apocryphal and we're becoming apocryphals once again.
Mm-hmm.
We're like young apocryphals.
Young apocryphal what?
Foals.
Oh, foals. Mm-hmm. Got it. Mm, yeah. Okay. Apocryphal, baby.
Oh, what? Unnecessarily harsh.
So we're talking about the book of Tobit, or Tobit.
Mm-hmm. Tobit.
Tobit. More like Tobit, because this book sucks.
What?
I'm just
that
kidding.
Doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't suck. Also, Tobits don't suck. I don't know.
That's an apocryphal right there.
Regardless, we do want to preface it with our standard... trigger warning that it might contain disturbing content.
Yeah. You know, it's the Bible, so it's old. It's from another time when some people will tell you that those times were better, and I will tell you that those times are different.
They're definitely worse, as we're about to see.
Mm-hmm.
So the book of Tobit
okay.
is not in my Bible.
Okay.
Not my normal NIV.
Where'd you read it?
I read it at BibleGateway.com.
Classic.
And I read the Good News translation.
Why?
Because Mallory Ortberg, our guest a couple episodes, made fun of it, and I thought it would be fun to read it.
Oh, interesting.
But you have it in your NRSV,
oh, yeah.
Right?
My NRSV is the Oxford NRSV, including the Apocryphunk, which means it's got up. Keep trying... them the entire episode.
You're already out. There's no more.
What? No, I have like 12 more.
Okay. I'm bracing myself.
My cool Bible has everything in it. I don't have to go other places to find spiritual information. So it has the Apocrypha in it, meaning, well, I think, first of all, can mm-hmm. we talk? Can we rap for a second?
Yeah.
I feel like calling it the Apocrypha is kind of harsh. Because, like, it's in the Catholic Bible.
It is, and in the Eastern Orthodox Bible.
And that's, like, 40% plus
that's
of,
a big,
of the Christians in the world?
I didn't even know until we started doing this podcast.
That Catholics had extra Bibles?
That Catholics had extra books in the Bible. Like wisdom teeth. Just waiting.
Oh, but in more way than one. Because this book is full of wisdom.
Well, wouldn't go that far.
And I can use it to grind down those tasty greens that I need to live.
Yep. That's exactly how the Bible works. If any of our listeners were raised Catholic or have experience with Catholicism, you might know about this book, except that something I've also learned since starting this podcast is that, like, Catholics don't really read the Bible.
So why do Catholics, the branch of Christianity that is apparently, and this is not like my personal judgment, but this is just what I've been told, that apparently don't read the Bible that much. Why do they get extra books? You would think you would.
It's weird,
right? You'd think you would give the extra books to the people that read them.
So I was raised Presbyterian. That's, mm-hmm. you know, a form of Protestantism. And in Protestantism, like, the Bible is considered the ultimate authority. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what your preacher says if the Bible says different.
Mm.
And
because that was the whole, like, point of the Protestant Revolution.
Yeah, that was, like, one of the things that separated that, like,
the men from the boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The wheat from the chaff.
Mm-hmm.
The cream from the milk.
Okay. For a really good short summary of the Protestant Reformation, uh-huh. I recommend listening to the episode of History Honeys, a podcast that's kind of like ours because it's like a couple learning about history together.
Mm-hmm.
They have an episode about Anabaptists mm-hmm. that includes a short rundown of the Protestant Reformation that it's like gives you all the highlights. It's real good. Yeah. So the Catholic Bible has a bunch of like extra little books in there that I guess nobody reads. I was raised Protestant. You were raised non-believing.
Mm-hmm.
With some small Jewish elements.
Small Jewish elements, like hydrogen, helium.
Is helium Jewish?
Well, it was Heliumovich, and then they had to change it at Ellis Island.
That makes sense. We don't actually know anything about Catholicism. you know?
True, I guess.
Did we get a Catholic guest to give us a more accurate background on the Book of Tobit? No. We decided to speculate wildly.
I have played several Assassin's Creed games, I'll let you know.
I would say that everything we say about Catholics and Catholicism in this episode
uh-huh.
is 100% accurate and true. For example, all Catholics have an extra toe. Except for converts, who have two extra toes, of course.
Because they got to get one extra because they came to it late.
Yeah,
and they haven't spent as much time living with the extra toe.
Also, Catholics are not allowed to say the word milk. Although they are allowed to drink it. No, I'm just kidding. Obviously, Catholics are only allowed to drink red wine, which is why we are drinking red wine right now.
Can I get a review of the wine from you tonight?
It's terrible. It's probably on par with communion wine. I personally grew up taking communion with grape juice because mm-hmm. I'm not a filthy papist.
I grew up taking communion with grape drank.
That must have been...
Because I go hard as hell.
A lit-ass communion. Yeah, okay. So, fun facts. I mean, fast facts. They're not that fun.
Oh, shit. You really shouldn't sell out the segment before it starts.
Extremely entertaining facts. Tobit, or Tobit, I still don't. I mean, I think in Hebrew it would be Tovit, but I don't know. Is not in the Protestant Bible because it's not in the Jewish Bible.
That's right.
A.K.A. the Tanakh.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason it's not in those Bibles is because the origins are very unclear. No one's really sure when it was written. They used to think it was written in like 100 A.D.
Mm-hmm.
But then after the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls in the 1950s, they now think it's more like 100 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, it's way, way after the events that it's describing, which are from like 700 or 800 B.C.
Right. And it's definitely post-exilic. Because it has a couple turns of phrase that are directly taken from Deuteronomical books that only became proper super canon after the exile.
Actually, speaking of deuters, apparently Catholics often refer to this book as deuterocanonical.
Deuterocanonical.
And so like duder, meaning like two, you know, mm-hmm. like duo. So it's like second tier canon.
Oh.
Yeah.
These are the B tier books.
Yeah, this is the B sides of the Bible.
Oh, we're in the B sides and unreleased section of the
Bible?
Yeah,
we're in the demos. So it's a story about the Assyrian exile, or it takes place during the Assyrian exile.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we should probably refresh people on the Assyrian exile, because I know we have a lot of new listeners, and also some of our old listeners might not remember all the details because they are confusing.
Yeah, some of our co-hosts might not remember all the details.
Yeah. Oh, you, for example.
Well, I mean, like, I definitely remember that it happened and that it was, like, the second most important exile.
Yeah. Okay, so back in the day, mm-hmm. there were 12 tribes of Israel.
Oh, this is familiar uh-huh. to me.
Descended from the 12 sons of Jacob, also called Israel.
12 large sons of Jacob, uh-huh. yes.
And that's kind of a bit of an oversimplification because some of them were like half tribes and like mm-hmm. his son's son, like it, whatever. Close enough to say 12 tribes, 12 sons of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And these 12 tribes are living in the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
But some infighting happens and the kingdom splits in two. So then there's the northern kingdom, Israel, with its capital at Samaria.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's bigger and 10 of the 12 tribes live there. Then there's the southern kingdom of Judah with its capital at Jerusalem, and 2 of the 12 tribes live there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's an oversimplification because I think it's kind of like 2.5 and 9.5.
Sure, something like that.
I think the Levites are kind of split between.
I also thought that like some of the half tribes like lived on the other side of the Jordan or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. But okay, you know, like good enough. So in the books of Kings and Chronicles, we went through this big long list of rulers of both kingdoms over hundreds of years. Some were good. Most were bad.
Yeah, you and I wrote a song about it.
Yeah, some were bad and some were gooda, as our song said, to rhyme with something that I don't remember. You can go back and listen to those episodes if you want to hear the gory details. And they were quite gory.
Quite gory indeed.
But at some point, Assyria took over the northern kingdom, mm-hmm. Israel, and deported all the Israelites to Assyria. So that's the Assyrian exile.
Right.
Later on, right. Babylon took over the southern kingdom, Judah, and deported all the Jews to Babylon, and that's the Babylonian exile. Now, the Babylonian exile ended when Persia took over Babylon.
God, this is fucking complicated.
And they let the Jews go back to their homeland in Jerusalem, in Judah. But the Assyrian exile never ended. So those 10 tribes were just gradually assimilated into the surrounding population,
mm-hmm.
which is why they're called the 10 Lost Tribes of Israel, which you may have heard of due to various conspiracy theories.
Yeah, and reggae music, yeah.
And reggae music. So Tobit, the protagonist of this book,
mm-hmm.
is in one of those 10 lost tribes, the tribe of Naphtali.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is about what happens to him and his family in Assyria.
So as a reminder, this is from a period in Judaism when the Jews were struggling. They had a plague,
mm-hmm.
and the plague was idol worship.
You ask an ancient Israelite which god he worshipped, he'd say, what do you got?
Mm-hmm. They'll worship anything.
They worship Baal. They worship Asherah. They worship the sun. They worship the moon.
Mm-hmm.
They worshiped poles. They worshiped statues. There was nothing they loved more than worshiping things other than the one true God that defined them as a people.
That's right. They would go to every high place that they could find and sacrifice whatever they got.
It did not matter how many thousands of them God smote. They just could not wait to get their little paws on another idol to worship.
That's true. So that's the atmosphere in which this book takes place.
So our hero, Tobit,
mm-hmm.
Comes from a family that is worshiping the golden bull.
Right. But he's still got memories of the good times.
And he's actually observant.
Mm-hmm.
So he makes all the right sacrifices. He donates the correct amounts to the temple and to the poor. And he goes to the religious festivals in Jerusalem. He believes in the one true God.
Right.
He doesn't care that his family is idolatrous.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a wife named Anna.
Okay.
And he has a son named Tobias.
Yeah.
And they're chilling in Israel until they and everyone they know gets deported to Assyria.
And in Assyria, our hero, Tobit, runs afoul of the law.
Well, he's doing pretty good at first.
Yeah.
Because he gets this job working for the emperor, Shalmaneser.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a buyer. And so he's going on all these business trips. And on one of these trips, he hides 600 pounds of silver coins with his buddy Gabael in a place called Media. It doesn't say what kind of media this is. Broadcast media, print media, social media? I don't know. Also, it seems kind of suspicious. Like, is he embezzling money or what? But whatever. I don't care. I don't care about the interests of an ancient Assyrian emperor. I'm with our man, Tobit.
Yeah, I assume Tobit is blameless and he's doing the right thing.
But then what happens is Shalmaneser dies and his son takes over.
Okay.
And he's much more hostile to Jews.
Mm.
And he kills a bunch of them. And Tobit, being very observant, as we know, buries the bodies of all the dead Jews in accordance with the law of Moses.
Which is somehow illegal?
I don't know if it's illegal. I think just like it pisses off the emperor.
To bury people? Like, I mean, I don't remember anything from Deuteronomy or anything that laid out such complicated burial rituals that somebody would get upset about them. Like, what were these Assyrians doing that burying somebody in the ground was such like a notable diversion from the norm?
Well, I think it might be like he wanted to kill them and like that would be an example to everyone. And so he wanted like the dead bodies, you know, in the public square or whatever.
I see.
That's an educated guess, though.
Our ancient Assyrian listeners, write in and let me know what the big deal was.
What Sennacherib's deal was.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Tobit no longer has his cushy job, and he has to go into hiding, and the government...
Because of his corpse-burying ways.
Yeah. And the government takes all his money, much like Uncle Sam and the clowns in Congress.
That's right, much like our fallen hero, Kim.com.
So,
just a joke. I really don't have any opinions either way on that.
Nico feels very strongly about Kim.com, and everyone should write to him about it. But
only in a sexual way.
Sennacherib gets assassinated by his sons, and then another son takes over.
Mm-hmm.
That's Esarhaddon, and he puts Tobit's nephew Ahikar in charge of his treasury.
Right.
So now it's safe for Tobit to come back out of hiding. So he's chilling.
Yeah. And in fact, when he gets home, they lay out a big feast for him.
Well, it's the harvest festival.
Okay. It's the festival of Glasnost or something. What's it called?
The festival of weeks, a.k.a. Shavuot.
Okay. There you go.
But also it is the festival of Glasnost. And
in some places it's called Pentecost.
Oh.
That's what I was reaching for.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were reaching for, like, a gradual opening of Russia to the West.
Well, you know I'm always reaching for that gradual opening of Russia to the West.
Okay. Need to monitor your internet usage, apparently. So, yeah, it's the Harvest Festival.
The spread is top-notch.
They've got...
95 out of 100 for the
Bialys.
Spread.
They've got challah. I only know baked goods. What else do Jews eat?
Juicy, whatever's on the menu, baby.
I don't think that's true. They don't eat pork.
So the Bible says the table was set for me and the dishes placed before me were many. So I said to my son Tobiah, son, go out and bring in whatever poor person you find among our kindred exiled here in Nineveh, who may be a sincere worshiper of God, to share this meal with me. Indeed, son, I shall wait for you to come back.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to mention that it's in first person.
Parts of it are.
Yeah. So... a problem happens.
Father, I said to him. Here I am, son. He answered, Father, one of our people has been murdered. He has been thrown out into the marketplace, and there he lies strangled. I sprang to my feet, leaving the dinner untouched, carried the dead man from the square, and put him in one of the rooms until sundown, so that I might bury him. I returned and washed, and in sorrow ate my food. I remembered the oracle pronounced by the prophet Amos against Bethel, and he explains that oracle said, yeah, Jews are in trouble.
Yeah.
The exile isn't good.
And we already know that burying bodies is like his his main deal.
Yeah.
Although his neighbors all tell him, like, you're just going to get in trouble again. He's like, no, man, I got to.
He's like, haven't you learned your lesson? You just went into exile for burying bodies. And he's like, no, I can't stop.
I
got the itch.
Just gives me a rush, man.
An unusually nice sense of pacing and action.
That's true.
Here in this piece of writing. How do you feel about that?
I feel great. It's like in media res.
Well, except, I mean, we haven't rezzed. Like, we're actually in media right now.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And later we're going to media.
Yeah. So we're like ex-media right now because mm-hmm. we're still in Nineveh. So then what happens is he's unclean. He's ritually unclean from handling a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to sleep outside by a wall. I mean, the wall is optional, but he has to, like, sleep away from his house.
And this is goofy as hell because...
While he's sleeping.
Here's the quote. I did not know that sparrows were perched on the wall above me. Their warm droppings settled in my eyes, causing white scales on them. I went to doctors for a cure, but the more they applied ointments, the more my vision was obscured by the white scales until I was totally blind. For 4 years, I was unable to see, and all my kindred were distressed at my condition.
Sparrow shit in his eyes and he went blind. That's like a main plot point in this book, is that sparrows shit in his eyes and he goes blind while he's sleeping.
What does it mean?
What does it mean?
And the reasons that got him there were good. Like, he should have been burying those bodies to honor God based on his own teachings and his own opinions.
Well, that's not what the sparrows thought.
But what does it mean?
I don't know. So now he's blind and he can't work because he's blind and they haven't invented Braille or anything yet. And so his nephew who works in the treasury supports him for a couple years, but then he moves away. It's just like not really explained. It's like, he got a promotion. He had to move to Elam.
Yeah.
And so now Tobit's wife, Anna, has to support the family with her weaving.
The next section of the book, by the way, is Tobit's prayer for death.
Because what happens is Anna gets paid one day for her weaving with a goat. And Tobit, for some reason, thinks that she stole the goat and prays for God to kill him because he's so ashamed. And it's really amazing because it's in first person still. And he's like, one day my wife got paid with a goat, but I didn't believe her. So I was praying for death because I was so ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I was mistaken. She actually got paid with that goat. But like, whatever. I really wanted to die.
Anyway, here's my prayer for death.
Yeah.
It is better for me to die than to live because I have listened to undeserved reproaches and great is the grief within me. People are very concerned about reproaches, undeserved ones especially.
It's true. I mean, you would be too if you were blinded by sparrow shit, I imagine.
I'm confused here because what are the undeserved reproaches that he's been experiencing?
I don't really know. I mean, I guess for burying the dead bodies?
It's unclear, but I think those are the only reproaches he's found.
Listeners, our faces are like twisting into question marks right now. We're looking at each other like... meanwhile, back at the ranch, a woman named Sarah is also praying for the sweet release of death because...
She wanna die.
She's been married 7 times, and an evil demon keeps killing her husbands on their wedding night.
And which demon is that?
I didn't write down his name, did you?
Yeah, it's Asmodeus.
Asmodeus.
Or Asmodeus.
And some people think she's a pulling a Scarlett Johansson.
She's a Black Widow?
She's a Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen any of those movies, but I assume that she gets that name because she kills all her husbands. Is that true?
I'm just going to say yes.
Great. So she's embarrassed because people think she's like a 7-time murderer. Also, it's like kind of sad to see like fuck 7 guys and then they all die. Like, it doesn't make you feel
No, that's the important thing is she doesn't get to fuck them.
Oh, she doesn't?
They die on the way to having intercourse with her.
Oh.
So she's still a virgin.
Oh, well, good for her.
Is that? Complicated. It's complicated.
It's complicated.
I'm judging by the strange noises coming from your face that it's complicated.
Virginity is a patriarchal construct anyway, but she also can't give birth to any heirs if there's no man around to put a baby in her.
Well, yeah, if you don't fuck, you don't have kids.
But she's her parents' only child. So,
mm-hmm.
So we're gonna put an asterisk on Sarah.
Okay.
The seven-time virgin.
Hasn't she, you know, had enough? Like, hasn't she gone through enough that we don't need to put an asterisk on her too?
We're gonna put an asterisk on her for later.
She's an asterisk youth.
And we'll go back. Baby.
Are you going to give me a promotion right now? Baby, I've been working really hard.
Baby, I have some bad news for you. I'm afraid you're fired.
Oh, no. Not again.
But then we cut back to Tobit, who is giving his son Tobias some fatherly advice.
Yes.
And it includes, you know, worship God, not golden calves. Give money to the poor. Don't drink too much.
It's all classic Deuteronomical advice.
Always marry a relative. Never marry someone who isn't related to you.
Mm-hmm.
Got to keep it in the family.
Pour out your wine and your bread on the grave of the righteous, but do not share them with sinners.
And then the last thing is, you know, there's always money in the banana stand.
That's right.
I.e., I left 600 pounds in silver coins with my buddy Gabael.
And I have one half of the will, one half of the contract.
Yeah, and I have the contract. I have this in writing, and it's in media.
Yeah, so he's got to, like, devise a legal heist scheme. It's like a legal heist movie.
Except that, I mean, his plan is just to ask for it back.
Yeah, that's why it's legal.
Okay.
But it, like, they have to recruit some people to do it.
Okay.
And by people, I mean one person.
And we'll find out who that person is.
It's like Ocean's One. Or no, Ocean's Two.
We'll find out who the second Ocean is after the break.
Oh, yeah. Nice radio, baby.
Thank you, my darling.
Hey, what's up, everybody? We're going to take a break.
Thanks to all the cats and kittens out there in Radioland.
Cats and kittens?
Yeah.
Are like the cats boys and the kittens girls?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is making sense. It's clicking into place.
Cats, like, kittens, and other assorted felines out there in Radioland.
What's up? What is there besides cats and kittens?
There's people who are non-binary.
Between cats and kittens?
There's teenage cats.
All right, shut up. We're gonna
you
sort
shut
this...
up.
We're gonna sort this out, and we'll be right back after this. Bye.
Bye. Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And we're talking about the Book of Tobit. And when we left off, Tobias was going to go get the 600 pounds of silver coins that his dad, Tobit, left with his buddy Gabael in a city or state called Media.
And Tobit is concerned that his son won't be able to redeem this debt if he dies. If Tobit dies.
Oh.
And Tobit is like praying for death. And he's like, sort this out while I'm alive, and then yes. I can die and you'll be taken yes. care of.
But there's a problem, which is that Tobias, doesn't know if Gabael is going to like trust him because mm-hmm. he's not his dad. And B, he doesn't know how to get to Media.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like my career. So he's preparing for the trip, and the Archangel Raphael comes down mm-hmm. in human form,
mm-hmm.
and he says that his name is Azarias, son of Ananias. It could possibly be pronounced Azarias, like Hank and his family.
Oh, it could. It could be pronounced like a Hank.
And so that's like part of their tribe. So that's like trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And he offers to escort Tobias to Media.
Tobias said to him, "Do you know the way to Media?" "Yes," he replied, "I've been there many times. I know the place well, and I'm acquainted with all the routes. I have often traveled to Media. I used to stay with our kinsman Gabael, who lives at Rages in Media." Or Rages?
I assume Rages.
"It is a good 2 days."
But Rages is good. That fits right in with Media.
It does. "It is a good 2 days journey from Ecbatana to Rages, for Rages is situated in the mountains. But Ecbatana is in the middle of the plain." Okay, like nobody asked you your fucking life story. You were just like day labor. Like,
actually, I think Tobit explicitly asked him for his life story because he was like, "I'm blind from sparrow shit, and I don't know if I can trust you with my son, well, my precious son."
This is Tobiah asking him. Tobiah goes out to the corner and finds a dude. That read is a little suspicious to me when like the dude is like, "Oh, I know everything about Media." Mm. What a coincidence. I've stayed there many
times. Know
everything
about Media. I know all the hashtags.
I'm a regular Media hound.
I know all the memes.
I spend all the time on the social ones, for example.
I do it all the different ways.
That's right.
So then we got like the adventures of Toby and Raff.
Yep.
And they're like going on their little journey.
Before they go on their journey, though, Tobias brings his new conquest or his new buddy, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
His new buddy.
Continue.
Back to meet his dad. Tobit greeted him first. He replied, "Joyful greetings to you." Tobit answered, "What joy is left for me? Here I am, a blind man who cannot see the light of heaven, but must remain in darkness, like the dead who no longer see the light. Though alive, I am among the dead. I can hear people's voices, but I do not see them."
Yes, Tobit's not doing so great.
It's like, is your dad, like, okay?
Yeah, it's like...
Don't worry about him.
Yeah, we're just, you know.
We're going out to get his inheritance, and then he can die.
Yeah. So... they go out, they're trekking down the road, and they stop to camp by the Tigris River,
mm-hmm.
where a fish jumps out of the water and tries to swallow Tobias's foot.
Yes, he shouted in alarm, but the angel said to the young man, "Grab the fish and hold on to it."
Yes, grab it. Grab that fish.
He seized the fish and hauled it up on dry land. The angel then told him, "Slit the fish open and take out its gall, heart, and liver."
Okay, this is getting a little explicit. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I'm sorry. I thought you were being triggered.
No.
"And keep them with you, but throw away the other entrails. Its gall, heart, and liver are useful for medicine."
Yes.
Of course.
Okay, so they eat the fish and they retain
eat the fish,
the gallbladder, heart, and liver in a little pouch, perhaps.
I assume they keep them separate because they've got very distinct uses, as we will learn.
Yes. So they've got their fish organs, and they keep on trucking, and eventually they're getting close to Media, and they reach Ecbatana.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ecbatana is where Sarah lives now. You remember Sarah earlier?
We put an asterisk on her, most cruelly, if I remember.
Yep. And Raff says... "Bruh, come here, I gotta tell you, like, I'm your cousin.
I will be your wingman."
Yeah, and we're gonna stay with our uncle Raguel, which means the tomato sauce of God. And, you know, he's my uncle too, because I'm your cuz.
Yeah, because I'm your cousin and not an angel.
I'm not a being of pure light.
Mm-hmm.
And his since daughter, you are, Sarah.
Yeah, and since you are Sarah's closest relative, you more than any other have the right to marry her.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, we learned about this in the Book of Ruth, right? Uh-huh. So she's an eligible bachelorette, and incest is very important to our family, as
That's
we all
right.
know.
That's right.
So I think you should marry her. Plus, because of our awesome incestuous inheritance laws... Uncle Ragu has to give you his daughter, or he could face the death penalty.
That's right. And Raphael,
isn't that great?
That is awesome. Raphael's closing words to him: "Now listen to me, brother. Do not worry about that."
Bruh.
"Now listen to me, brother. Do not worry about that demon. Take Sarah."
Yeah, yeah. Because Tobias is like, "Well, demons killed her first seven husbands. I'm not super into getting killed by a demon. And he's like, Ralph's like, no, don't worry about it. So they get there, and Raguel and his wife Edna welcome them.
And yeah, Tobias marries Sarah.
Tobias. Well, he asks for her in a marriage.
Yeah.
And Raguel's like, yeah, like you could marry her. In fact, if I don't let you, like, I could be put to death. Mm-hmm. But like, you're going to get demon murdered.
I love this. So the marriage goes ahead.
He, yeah.
Like, Raguel is delighted that somebody wants to marry his fucking cursed ass daughter.
Yeah.
The wedding night.
They drop the marriage contract.
Yeah, they drop the marriage contract. They have a feast, whatever.
Well, they don't have a feast. They just have like a regular dinner.
Okay, well, yeah, they have a nice dinner.
But they put Sarah in the spare room. Like, she's not there for the meal. They're just like, okay, you just go wait in here. This guy will come in and fuck you later.
And when he does go in for the wedding night, et cetera's.
Uh-huh. Tobias takes out the fish heart and fish liver that he stored, thanks to Raphael's advice.
Yeah, the ultimate wingman.
Azarias.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's literally like, the ultimate wingman. He's a man with wings.
When you... Oh, shit.
He burns the fish organs, and that causes the demon to flee to Egypt.
The odor of the fish repulsed the demon, and it fled to the upper regions of Egypt. Raphael went in pursuit of it, and there bound it hand and foot. Then Raphael returned immediately.
Yeah, and then apparently no one noticed that, like, their house guest slash cousin just, like,
flashed himself,
zoomed away at the speed of light, and, like, came back. Yeah, like, nobody notices. Raguel and Edna just leave the two lovebirds alone in the spare bedroom. That's mm-hmm. actually literally what the Good News translation called it, is the spare bedroom. And they have a servant start digging a grave because they assume that a demon is going to murder Tobias.
Perhaps Tobias will die. Then we would be a laughingstock and an object of mockery.
Yeah, I really like that. That's their main concern, is like the neighbors will make fun of us.
Because like, did you not learn after the first seven?
The first seven.
How could you let an eighth husband die?
Yeah. And so they want to, like, have the grave ready so they can, like, get rid of his body, like, before dawn, and mm-hmm. the neighbors won't see. But, hurrah, Tobias lives. They fuck, I guess.
Yeah.
The
servant sneaks in there to check if Tobias is dead, and I assume he's just sleeping soundly in post-coital bliss.
They fill in the grave.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, everything's...
You know what I'm talking about.
Everything's spiffy, and they start having a wedding feast. Raphael, a.k.a. Azarias,
mm-hmm.
Back from his debut in the Egyptian demon rodeo, goes and gets the 600 pounds of silver coins from Gabael
yes.
in Media.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings Gabael to the... wedding feast.
I like the reason why Tobias sends Raphael, aka Azarias, away to get the money during the wedding feast, I like it, is very endearingly specific. He's like, my mom and dad will be very worried about me.
Yes.
And so, like, the longer I'm away, the more worried they'll get. So while we have to have this feast that has to be 2 weeks long, let's not waste any time. Can you just, like, go take care of this thing for me so we can get back to my parents as soon as possible? I don't know. I found that kind of endearing.
Yeah, and the wedding feast takes 2 weeks for some reason.
It's always been 2 weeks, honey.
Tobias's parents
have never been to a wedding feast?
I can't say that I have.
Oh, well, you missed out.
Tobias's parents are worried sick. And mm-hmm. they think he must have died. I don't understand why they couldn't, like, send a messenger. I don't understand why the parents aren't invited to the wedding feast of their only son. But whatever, after 2 weeks, they're done with the feast, and Tobias finally returns home with a new wife and hella ducats, and he still has the magical fish liver with him. So when he gets home, he's able to magically cure his father's blindness.
With the fish gall.
With the fish gall, the liver.
Not the liver. Come on.
I'm sorry.
That's a fucking rookie-ass mistake. Can you believe if you tried to apply some fish liver to somebody's face?
Anyway, so now Toby can see again. Yay for Tobit. He spent 4 years blind.
Because birds shit in his eyes.
Yeah, because birds shit in his eyes while he was asleep by a wall.
And then, like, through the grace of God, he was given sight back because Raphael decided to impart what sounds like old wives' tales of, like, folk medicine.
Yes.
To his son.
Yes. So Tobit's family wants to pay Raphael, their putative cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Half of the silver coins that they just retrieved. Because, like, he really went above and beyond as a travel guide.
Yeah. I mean, like, he was the ultimate wingman, first of all. Secondly, he helped...
He defeated a demon.
He helped cure blindness.
And also, he, like, got 600 pounds of silver coins, like, no problem whatsoever. Like,
yeah, that part isn't even mentioned.
No, it's like one sentence. It's like, yeah.
He just takes care of it.
Yeah, exactly. So they're like, here, take 300 pounds of silver coins.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, actually, I don't need it because I'm an angel.
I'm about to blow your GD minds right now.
And so then he explains, like, all his angel deeds, which is interesting because it kind of, like, tells us about how angels work, I guess.
Right.
So he says, A, that he delivered both Tobit's and Sarah's prayers to God.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, like, God doesn't receive your prayers directly. An angel is like the messenger for them.
He's like the telegraph operator or something that translates the stuff coming over the
wire, I guess.
And turns it into paper.
Also, apparently he was the one who was sent to test Tobit by blinding him. By, I guess, squeezing full sparrows over his eyes.
Maybe he was those sparrows. Squeezing full sparrows. Yeah. I mean, if the sparrows are full, they're going to become unfull regardless. I don't know if they need to be squeezed.
Well,
if you squeeze them.
See what I mean? He could, like, squeeze them sort of metaphysically. You know, he could be like poke them just in the right place. I mean, he knows about all the organs, clearly. He knows about all the fish organs. Why wouldn't he know about the sparrow organs?
You're making a great case.
It's just squeezing some sparrows.
Just squeezing some sparrows.
Just a regular night squeezing some sparrows. He was also sent to cure Tobit's blindness and hooked Bison Sarah up, obviously.
Yep.
We just witnessed that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says he's one of seven angels who stand in God's presence, ready to serve him. Then he pieces back out into the sky.
So at the end of the book,
uh-huh.
Everything is pretty much cool.
Yeah.
Which means Tobit can die.
Yay! But it's like 50 years later.
Yeah, it is.
Because it says he's 62 when he's blinded, and the blindness lasts for 4 years, mm-hmm. So he's 66. And he doesn't die till age 112.
Mm-hmm. A very respectable age.
Yes. And he, on his deathbed, gives Tobias another round of fatherly advice. But this time it's less focused on incest,
mm-hmm.
And it's more focused on, he says, like, flee to Media again, because, like, the Babylonian exile is about to happen, and we're already in the Assyrian exile,
that's
so
right.
It's going to be bad times for the Jews, and God's temple in Jerusalem is going to be destroyed.
Right.
So that does happen. Like, those things that he predicts do happen. The temple gets destroyed and Babylon takes over Judah. But, like, this book was written hundreds of years after that.
Yes.
So, like, the prophecy isn't actually that impressive.
Right.
But what's weird is that he then says that, like, when the temple is rebuilt, that's going to be like a day of reckoning.
Yeah.
And all the nations in the world will start worshiping the one true God. And
a light that will be seen across the entire world will flash, which whenever I see something like that, I'm like, yeah, it's the atomic bomb.
And, well, that would be a really impressive prophecy.
Well, I mean, directly after the dropping of the first atomic bomb, Israel was founded.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, Moses. I mean.
So anyway, that's a prophecy of Tobit, is that a light will flash across the entire world, and then all the nations of the world will pay homage to the holy city in Jerusalem.
And he also says like all the sinners will be wiped from the face of the earth. But
yeah, that didn't actually happen.
We do see, I mean, A, that didn't happen after the atomic bomb. And also B, it didn't happen after the temple was rebuilt.
Oh, the temple was
A little emotional.
I thought you were doing just a little Betty Boop thing.
After the temple was rebuilt, which happens in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. We saw that.
We did.
And
the boringest books in the Bible.
Shit did not happen. Yeah, nothing happened. The author writing this hundreds of years later knows that, but is still writing this in. It's kind of like in the book of Enoch when we had like an apocalypse from the past.
Right.
So I guess my question is, like, do you think this should be in the Bible?
Here are the positives for me.
Okay.
In terms of it being a Jewish piece of literature, it's got a lot of prose to it. I mean, like, because it's a nice parable for a lot of the wisdom literature or and the Deuteronomical law literature sort of acted out. You know, and there was some of this scattered into the earlier books, too, where there would be, like, little examples of somebody, you know, being like, oh, well, the correct thing to do in this case is actually to have X person marry Y because they're the most closely related relative.
In the Book of Ruth.
Especially in the Book of Ruth. This one does it, I think, a little bit better because the narrative is a little bit better constructed.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a little more flow through it. It's not just like crammed in as like a crappy part of some other book. It's also got a nice, it's got some prayers in it, you know, but they're like baked into the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like,
and their prayers for the sweet release of death.
That's right. Although there is a nice, there's a song at the end.
Yeah, a song
God.
Of praise at the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's got a lot.
Which, like, they fucking should praise God because, like,
he did it all for them.
Yeah. Yeah. He just sent out an angel for their individual family to, like, make them rich and happy.
Even though it apparently wasn't because of God's preference for them, it was because of,
I guess, like,
the power of prayer or something.
Well,
like
I guess
that.
Tobit was, like, righteous.
Yeah.
Here's what's weird to me.
Okay.
A, the big emphasis on angels and like the actions of angels, which I don't know.
Has been downplayed quite a bit so far.
I don't know like specifically how all Protestant denominations deal with angels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly angels are in the Bible, in the Protestant Bible. And like the angel Gabriel plays a big role in the story of Jesus's birth. I know like a lot of Protestants sort of believe in angels in a like non-biblical way as like good luck charms type of things, and they like collect, I don't know, little porcelain children angels.
Sure,
whatever.
Like a precious moments kind of thing.
Yeah. But like growing up in the church, I don't think we ever talked about angels once.
Mm-hmm. Except in the outfield, of course.
Of course, yeah. I mean, that was included, like, at the end of every sermon, but or, aside from that.
Or in America.
Yeah. Well, that one was not included.
Not talked about in.
That was
in
extremely sermons. Ignored. Yeah, so that part is weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the other part that's weird to me is, like, that they just, like, kind of casually mention an apocalypse.
Yeah, the prophecy at the end is pretty strange.
Are all the Apocrypha, like, do they all have to do with apocalypses? I mean, we've only done two so far, and they both featured apocalypses.
I mean, we'll just have to see. We've got a lot to go through.
That's true. We still do have several Apocrypha. And
we still have a lot of Apocryphon to get through. Should we write this book?
I guess so.
Okay, let's do it.
What are you going to rate this book?
I am going to give this book 9 out of 14 Demon Wedding Nights.
Okay.
And let me explain why.
All right.
First of all, I think the most important thing about it is it has a real nice narrative through line.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
It starts, it ends, it's got, like we talked about, little interjections of action in the scenes. It's got scene construction, and I think that the construction of the literature is at a higher level than some of the other garbage in this book.
Mm-hmm.
However, the core of it, like what it does that for, is like not that interesting. I mean, it's like just sort of a morality story to tell you about like some key Jewish concepts, like marry your closest relative.
Yep.
But I mean, on the other hand, one of the other core Jewish concepts is trying to tell you is if you have money, it's like your money is an obligation, mm-hmm. like Mallory Ortberg said.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be charitable. Like that is your obligation as a Jew, which I kind of like. I like that.
Yeah.
And the fact that Tobit's essential problem was caused by the fact that he was like too generous with his time and that he was like too committed to being a good Jew,
mm-hmm.
like a good religious observant Jew.
Yes.
That like that not only brought the attentions of the state upon him.
The fat cats in Washington.
The fat cats in Washington. But also of God, question mark? Because and that's points off because I don't get it. Like, he was tested because some sparrow shat in his eyes that Raphael, like, squeezed. Raphael, like, the angel, squeezed some sparrows into his eyes.
I like your past tense of shit as shat.
Mm-hmm.
What's the past perfect, though? I shit, I shat, I have
shat. I have shat. Shat applies
okay,
there,
shat.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I have shat in many a gas station.
Okay. Not shit.
Bathroom.
You don't favor shitting.
No, that doesn't make any sense. Okay. That sounds silly.
Okay.
The problems with it
mm-hmm.
include the fact that it's pretty slight. Like, it doesn't really have a lot of, like, spiritual consequence to it.
Okay.
Except the bizarre
prophecy
at the end, which doesn't seem to line up with a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, it does seem like really shoehorned in there.
And the other problem is the problem that I think kept it out of like contention for canonical status in Judaism,
mm-hmm.
which is that it's like semi-historical. Like it was written in like the first century BC or second century BC.
Something like that.
But about a time like 600 years before that.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's like, it's got some basic errors about it that prevent it from being historical. Like the distances between the places are incorrect.
They are?
Mm-hmm. And some of the place names are made up.
Except for Media, the one true God.
And I think in the end, the testing of Tobit doesn't really have any powerful spiritual impact behind it. I mean, it feels like Job just like without any of the consideration or thought mm-hmm. put behind it.
Yeah, it's like a really like low stakes Job.
Yeah, which we already have full Job. Why would we need low stakes Job? What did you think?
I think I'm gonna give it 7 out of 11 papist sacrileges.
Okay.
Because, like, it's weird and unfamiliar to me.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I agree with the things that you said. That, like, I did like the pacing and the plot,
mm-hmm.
Despite the point of view violation after chapter 2.5 or so. It's weird. It's weird and focused on angels and the apocalypse in a way that I don't understand.
Cool.
And I hate what I don't understand, and I shun it. And I refuse to accept it.
Well, you're not the only person to do that. So, welcome to the fucking... Welcome to the nation.
Welcome to the jungle?
Yeah. Welcome to the jungle. Here's the plus side. We got fun and games.
Oh, sweet. I was afraid the jungle was going to be hella boring.
Speaking of hella boring, that's been our podcast.
Yay!
Before we finish out, I want to tell you one or two things.
What are the one or two things?
There were things I should have brought up earlier, but because I'm not a professional broadcaster and not very prepared, I screwed it up.
Oh.
For example, I had a little Asmodeus info.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me more about Asmodeus.
He's a cool demon.
Oh.
Here's the info I have. According to the Kabbalah and the school of Rashba,
uh-huh.
Asmodeus is a Cambion born as the result of a union between Agrat Bat Mahlat, a succubus, and King David.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's awesome, right?
That's fucked up.
He was supposed by some Renaissance Christians to be the king of the nine hells. Asmodeus also is referred to as one of the seven princes of hell. In Binsfeld classification of demons, each one of these princes represents one of the seven deadly sins. Asmodeus is the demon of lust and is therefore responsible for twisting people's sexual desires. So it's like the husband's wanting to fuck that virgin on wedding night. Summon the demon every time.
That's interesting because in the actual text of the book, it says that Raphael is one of seven angels.
Well, I mean, seven's an important number.
Yeah. But like, he's like one of the top seven angels. So if Asmodeus is
top angels,
the top seven demons, then that's
a direct conflict between upper management.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, those are my demon facts. So we're going to close it out there.
Okay.
This has been Sunday School Dropouts, a presentation of the Sunday School Dropouts Network, sponsored by the Sunday School Dropouts Trust of America.
Wow. Didn't realize we'd gotten that big.
Of which I am the CEO and president.
Oh. Well, what am I?
Secretary? Is that too sexist?
All right, we'll discuss this off air. We would like to thank Elise Carlton for our logo.
Yes, and you can find us on Twitter at SunSchoolDrop.
We're also on Facebook, SunSchoolDrop. Give us some thumbs.
Give us some thumbs.
Yeah.
Our website is SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
And Nico Dizella, our music and sound editing and producing and such.
You can send us email at contact@SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
And if you want to rate and review us on iTunes, that would be super, super helpful for us.
Not only would it be helpful, it would put you among the hallowed ranks of such brilliant and beautiful individuals as the following. R. Falconer wrote, 5 out of 5 uncanny valleys of dogs. I love this podcast more than ancient Israelites love worshiping Baal.
Oh my God, that's a fucking shit ton.
If you want to understand.
That is a metric fuck ton.
If you want to understand how much that is, this podcast will enlighten you. The Almighty Boob wrote.
Hi, Boob.
14 out of 14 hands on thighs. Like Lauren, I'm also an ex-believer turned atheist. My family was never really big on religion, but I still sort of believed, kinda. This podcast let me learn all the stuff I missed out on, never having really gone to church.
We have a review from Not Juniper, who rated us 7 out of 7 golden oxen. A wonderful podcast to someone raised Christian and who left the church a few years ago. Oh, girl, I feel you. This podcast is a hilarious and informational blast from the past. I recommend it for anyone, regardless of their knowledge or experience with the Bible. And then we also have the ghost of David Mitchell. Who's David Mitchell?
He's dead, I assume.
Isn't that a British comedian?
He used to be, baby.
Okay. The ghost of David Mitchell rated us 7 out of 5 worthless and reckless men. We're getting non-Euclidean here. And so the show is simply a treasure. Hilarious and endlessly fascinating. Thank you so much to all the people who rated and reviewed us on iTunes. It's so helpful and it really helps other people find us and we really appreciate it.
And we'll be back to regularly scheduled Bible programming next week.
We'll be back to what now?
Regularly scheduled Bible programming next week.
Is it like Uncle Raguel?
It's exactly like Uncle Raguel.
All right.
And
hope he gives me his only daughter in marriage. We'll find out next week on Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And we'll see you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.